It's a sound you may hear every day, possibly thousands of times a day. It depends on whether you edit, type, or consume, but for the majority of my designer colleagues, it's a sound that can signal productivity or a terrible attention span. It's a sound that can actually affect our buying decisions. It's a sound that a new generation will likely never hear. What is that clicking sound? I've been using a mouse in one form or another for the better part of 30 years. When I was younger, I took it for granted. As computers evolved and input methods changed, I would move with the times. I tried everything from gesture control to trackpads. Trackpads being a necessary evil in the world of mobile computing, although even those are giving way to touchscreens. Maybe it was the point in time that I began using computers, but my heart and perhaps my muscle memory has always been with the mouse. My first experience with a mouse was with an IBM PS2 computer. I can still remember the hollow clunk of the huge buttons and the subtle grinding of the rubber trackball contained within it. These sounds are part of my nostalgic soundscape, and they will forever serve as a conduit to a simpler time in computing. I work with my ears all day. I design sounds for things that do not make sound. I work very hard at creating a voice and a vocabulary for products and systems that have yet to learn to speak. I love what I do. I get to work with the smartest and most talented people. And a funny thing happens when you do something you love for years on end. You get good at it. And I've gotten good at listening. I noticed after a number of years that I was hearing things I had never noticed before. And these sounds had always been there, I just failed to hear them. And this is true of my mouse. Have you ever considered what your mouse sounds like? Have you ever thought twice when scrolling through pages or dragging a file across your desktop? Have you focused on the note that rings out when you place your mouse on the desk? The frequency that calls out when you double-click? Well, maybe not. But perhaps you will after listening to this. When sitting at a computer and making sounds, I work with many instruments. They range from random knickknacks and clackers to polyphonic analog synthesizers. We worked together to create sound. I realized that there was always another instrument in the room, another sound source that was matching my every gesture. This object would be an extension of my arm, and in some subtle way, it would affect how I work. It would grind and slide, its rhythmic detents sounding throughout the studio. Its punctuation? A click. In a mouse, the clicking sound that you hear is the result of a tiny switch inside the chassis. Alone, these micro switches sound very thin, almost imperceptible. When you pair these micro switches with a large paddle or button and place them into a hollow cavity, you begin to form an instrument. The tiny, almost imperceptible click becomes something else. Certain frequencies are amplified, and this causes the chassis to resonate. Thinking back to the older mice of the 80s and 90s, you can start to understand what I'm talking about. Add to this the pressure of your hand pressing down onto the surface of the desk, and the timbre changes even more. A mouse will sound different any desk and in any hand. It's really quite amazing when you think about it. I never really thought too much about what mouse I was using until I went to Nashville in early 2004. I was taking a Pro Tools certification course, and the instructor urged me to try the Kensington Expert Mouse. I learned that it was a standard piece of kit in all the recording studios, and this is largely due to the fact that it's a trackball and therefore needs very little real estate on the console to be useful. So, being young and impressionable, I raced out and bought one and happily went back to my home studio to begin the process of relearning how to use a mouse. Being a trackball, it made this a very difficult experience. I was immediately regretting my decision, but I felt I needed to give it a good go. And it was a 10-year go. One thing that struck me was the sound of the Expert Mouse. The huge ball rolled across its tiny bearings with a smooth silkiness that was such a pleasure. That is, until you had to scroll. The scroll wheel, which hasn't been updated since, felt like I was dragging a chunk of plastic across a desk covered in sand. It was terrible. The buttons were large and the chassis was pretty hollow, and this gave the expert mouse a very distinct tone. It was almost too much audio feedback, and I like audio feedback. It's what I do. It's important to me, and it's a natural consequence of interacting with the world. That being said, sometimes the feedback can turn you off. Compelled by a strange principle, I wouldn't give it up. Even after it died on me, I replaced it with a wireless version, thinking surely Kensington would have updated the scroll wheel. Nope. After a while, I got tired of the noise. I realized I didn't have to stay in this situation. So, being a slave to beautiful design and a sucker for all things Apple, I purchased the Apple Magic Mouse. And what a glorious design. It's so smooth and Apple-esque. It was love at first sight, and then frustration at first hold. It wasn't all bad, but it wasn't great. The click was well produced, and there was very little chassis resonance. It moved well across the desk, and it was slim, which is a plus for travel. But two things struck me about the Magic Mouse, and that's the touch interface for scrolling and the lack of button separation. Both of these issues are a result of its beautiful industrial design. And having a seamless, white, smooth top surface was indeed appealing, but I missed something that I had gotten used to and not even known it. With all mice that have separate buttons or paddles, there is a unique sound produced with each button, even if the micro switches are a matched pair and in theory identical. This is due in large part to the asymmetry of the chassis and the dampening effects of your hand and the different pressure being put on either side of the chassis. This is also because I have a tendency to raise my index finger off the mouse when right-clicking. Also, the Magic Mouse, despite having the capability of a left and right click, only has one micro switch. It uses capacitive touch to determine where you are clicking. I was talking to my brother one fine day about input devices. Yes, this is what we talk about on fine days. I was lamenting the hand cramps that I had been feeling of late through the use of my Magic Mouse. He suggested I try the Logitech Performance MX. He happened to have an older one that he wasn't using. He gave me this mouse. I got home and charged it up, installed the needed software, and immediately remembered why I love mice. The ergonomics of the Logitech MX series is unrivaled. My hand fell onto the surface of the Logitech as if jumping into a luxury hotel bed for the first time. Every point of contact was welcomed with a contoured comfort that actually made me want to use this mouse without even turning my computer on. This was an older mouse and probably had a good 10,000 hours on it, which ironically made it more of an expert than my expert mouse. Although the ergonomics were intact, the mechanisms inside were too far gone to be at all productive. The micro switches were intermittently double-clicking and the scroll wheel would only sense every 5 or 6 passes of the optical sensor. I later realized that a great deal of dog hair had something to do with this. Nonetheless, I was hooked on the Logitech ergonomics. Certain instruments age gracefully, changing their timbre and tone over time and maturing in a way that is pleasing to the ear. Well, the Logitech Performance did not. The buttons felt flappy. The clicks, mushy. The scroll wheel felt dull with no confidence. The chassis creaked and groaned as it resisted the interaction. Now, this didn't affect my confidence in Logitech at all. I saw the good in this product and I knew an up-to-date version would be everything I hoped. And I was right. I purchased the Logitech MX Master S2 about 6 months ago, and I've stopped thinking about my mouse. From the moment I held the MX Master in my hand, I knew I was home. It shared the same ergonomic pedigree as all the MX mice, but it seemed a touch more refined, maybe a better fit in my hand. The textures felt more natural, and it only made the experience that much better than that of the Performance MX. The mouse slid across my wooden desk with a smoothness and a lightness that made tracking effortless. There was no dissonance between the surface of my desk and the pads on the bottom of the mouse. The sound was as gentle as a breeze through a coniferous forest. It seemed harmonically in balance with the chassis and resonated ever so slightly with an increase in movement. The clicks were tight, and had very little chassis resonance. It was as if the chassis was tuned to the micro switches, each click ringing out a slightly different note whether you pressed the left or the right button. The scroll wheel purred as it went through its detents, the volume increasing slightly as you intensified your scroll. At a point, the scroll wheel would break from the detents and spin freely, almost silently. When the spin came to an end, or you placed your finger on the scroll wheel, a muted catch was heard. I have found myself fidgeting with this articulation many times. There is something about the relationship between these three phrases, the detents, the free spin, and the catch. So much musicality in a simple scroll wheel. As we move away from the mechanics to a solid-state world, we lose these wondrous sounds of actuation. We can mourn these losses, or we can save these sounds. Many people have collected these devices for the purposes of study and preservation. One such collection, which is the most extensive I've ever seen, is that of Bill Buxton. His library of human-computer interaction devices is as extensive as it is diverse. These collections will preserve the tactile experience for the lucky few who get to interact with the devices. However, for most of us, we will rely on recorded media to express the sounds that these devices made, and something will be lost in the translation. Apple started to do away with mechanics years ago when they introduced their new MacBooks with Force Touch. The technology allows the taptic engine to mimic the physical sensation of a micro switch being actuated. It gives the user a physical sensation as well as some subtle audio feedback. It's a very convincing experience and one that will no doubt be commonplace in the years to come. As we pair these haptic sensations with thoughtful sound design, we can produce some very natural audio feedback experiences. When designing interaction sounds, I always try to take a holistic approach from a physical standpoint. Sounds are created based on the laws of physics, and when we are interacting with a glass screen that has little to no give, physics tells us there should be no sound. Well, this often belies the graphical interaction on the screen, and it's important that we create the connection with the graphical, the physical, and the audible. We are moving away from mechanical objects that interface with computers as we know it. More and more, we interact with glass screens to type, tap, and draw. It's important to remember where we came from with regards to audio feedback. If we want to make our solid-state interactions feel natural, we need to take into account the natural world. And sound is a part of that. Now, this article has been a story of my search for the perfect-sounding mouse. And I think I found it. And I will enjoy this tactile experience while I can. The next time you're using your mouse or your trackball, take a listen to it. Who knows how long these devices are going to make these sounds.